Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, and I mean that literally because aren't we all kids on the inside? Too philosophical. Hi, I'm Kevin. This is Video Store Memoirs. With me, as always, is the lovely, the inebriated... sorry, did I let that slip? Jana, say hello to the people.
Hi, people!
Today, we are diving into one of our favorite sci-fi movies of all time. We're going to take a little trip back to 2002, back when I thought, I think Spielberg could do no wrong. I'm going to let Miss Jana take it from here because she is amped and ready to go.
Woo! Okay, I'm not that far gone, but no. Hi! So today we are talking about Minority Report. And if you would have told me pre-2002 that Tom Cruise would be in a sci-fi movie that would end up being one of my favorite sci-fi movies, I would have laughed at you. Because he wasn't known for sci-fi.
No, he's known has done his action, his drama, but not...
Romance, maybe.
Yeah, a few here and there with romance. I mean, you know, like Jerry Maguire kind of romantic comedy. Yeah.
Yeah, but not sci-fi. And I can't tell you, like, when I saw the previews for Minority Report, I had a lot of high expectations. But at the same time, again, I was wary. Because it's Tom Cruise, and I've seen almost everything Tom Cruise has been in, and I love the man. He's great. But again, not known for sci-fi, and sci-fi is, like, one of my favorite movie genres. So, to say I was hesitant going into it would be maybe understating it. But when I saw this movie, I was pleasantly surprised.
I saw it twice in the theater.
Yeah, it's... We'll save the it is for later. But let's talk about what our friends at IMBD.
You never get it right.
IMDb, International Movie Database, says about Minority Report. As Kevin mentioned, it's from 2002. It is PG-13, and it says John works with the pre-crime police, which stops crimes before they take place with the help of three precogs who can foresee crimes. Events ensue when John finds himself framed for a future murder.
Spot on.
Spot on, but not.
Yeah, there's a lot more to it, but, yeah. You know, well, they're trying their best not to give everything away.
Well, I think where on this kind of succinct description, I think where I falter on is the precogs who can foresee crimes. They don't foresee crimes. They foresee murder.
That is true. That is what they hone in on.
It is one specific crime. There is no other crime that they see other than murder.
That's got to be horrible.
Yeah. Awful. And these precogs. Precog, as in
precognition.
Yeah, precognition. I was going to stumble on the pronunciation of that word. As in, they can see future events. They are...
Clairvoyant.
Clairvoyant, yes. They get premonitions. Premonitions, and the three of them together get very strong premonitions all at the same time of a future event that's going to happen very specifically around murder. And the movie goes into more detail about how these three specifically came to be, the sad background of what kind of children they were. These are not just random magical beings that were born and they're like, oh, you can do this and let's do that. These were actual children from a very tragic background that were experimented on and worked with, and they figured out...
In most ways, they were breeded.
Yeah.
Sorry, not breeded. Bred. Sorry. But grammar, they
were,
people.
They were... But they were science experiments, basically, once they were born and they realized that they... you know, had issues and some possible gifts, then the scientific community and the specific department worked with them, and then they realized what it was specifically that they saw. And apparently there were lots of other children that had some of these issues and some of these gifts, but these were the only three that survived.
Yeah.
And were clumped together, and they realized they worked well as a hive mind to have these predictions and to come up with when these murders are going to happen. And lo and behold, the pre-crime department was invented, where they say, okay, we're going to stop crimes before they happen. We're going to arrest people based on the fact that someone saw a vision and predicted that this is going to happen and stop the murder from ever happening and put these people in jail for a murder they haven't actually committed yet, but according to this vision, will.
I mean, yeah, you just went a long way around it, but yeah, to the point, yes.
That's what they do. So there's a whole department, but again, obviously it's set in the future.
Not that far in the future anymore. It's only 30 years from now. Yeah,
we did the calculation when they showed the year.
2054.
And I was like, that's really only 30 years from now. And to Kevin's point, when he mentioned, like, it started well before that. They were 6 years into the project at that point. And there was something, you know, there was a lead up before that. Of them working on it, developing this before they actually, like, started the project to say, this is going to work and this is what we're going to do. So we are a lot closer to the date they possibly started working on these experiments.
In most cases, actually, what it turns out to be, like, this has been a 6-year experiment trying to get permanent government funding to make this a regular police department.
Right. It was a small launch. It's one of those things where we launched it locally in they were in the DC area, right? Like Virginia.
No, they're in DC. Like they specifically said, because of this program and how they've been running it up until this point with the major vote coming in Congress to make this a permanent law enforcement office, I should say. DC has had no murders.
Yeah.
In the past 2 years.
Yeah, because they've stopped it all. And, so they started it locally. One department, one state, one area, because D.C.'s not state, the capital, though. And if we can show that it works, and it works here, then we'll open the vote to move it nationally. So that's where we are at this point where the movie starts, is they are at the point where it's been going on for 6 years. There's a vote coming up to try and push it nationally to say, hey, pre-crime works.
Yeah. Like, it's basically the whole campaign that they show in this is, you know, I lost my brother, I lost my mom, I lost my wife, you know, and stuff like that. And they're like, if pre-crime existed, we wouldn't have lost these people. And so, you know, normal campaign stuff for, on this day, come in and vote for, to pass, make pre-crime a real thing. And
yeah.
So we come in on Tom Cruise, who plays, wait a minute, we forgot the most important thing going into the storyline. Tom Cruise plays Chief John Anderton, who is the head detective, as it were, of
the chief of the pre-crime department. He's in charge.
They're coming in on a possible case where the precogs have seen a vision of a possible murder, which they also, I did find it very interesting, they had two classifications. Red balls would come out into the system with names on it. That meant instantaneous crime of passion type murders. But then you also had brown balls that came out of it with names on it that signified premeditated. So since the implementation of this pre-crime, they rarely see any
premeditated
anymore, because people are like, you know, I'm going to think about this. Wait a minute. I don't want to think about somebody.
Yeah, nobody plans murder anymore because they know the precogs are out there. At least within, so it's like a 200-mile radius from D.C., from where the precogs are located. It's how far their visions work.
Right.
Which makes me think, though, they never really specified how they were going to make this work on a nationwide thing. If these are the only three that can do it, and they have a 200-mile radius.
Here's the thing. Like, in my mind, what I saw happening is the fact that you had these three who were basically bred to do this. They would just start mass-producing precogs. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, but the whole thing was that, so they weren't, it's not that they were bred to do it. It's that they were born of this certain situation, and they realized that they had some different developmental issues, and some of them happened to be this. These were kids of drug addicts.
Here's the thing. There were kids of drug addicts in some cases, but they did have, in some instances, where they were actually doing, like, in vitro fertilization and chemically inducing these embryos to try and get that. The person who basically founded Precrime, the woman he goes to see.
Scientist, yeah, but so maybe that's where some of the others came from, or maybe that's where the boys came from. But
yeah, probably the twins.
The female, Agatha, the one who was the strongest. Yeah,
she was born with it.
It didn't work without. She was born with it. Yeah. She was the child of a drug addict.
Yeah.
And then they helped, you know, bring it forward and, you know, whatever they had to do to her to make this kind of more dominant and putting her in this drug state and stuff. But it's like, still, there's a lot of shit that went in to get these. And they were at this point, not adults maybe, but older, late teens, early 20s.
Agatha looked like
maybe.
She was in her 20s.
Yeah. So there'd been a lot of time put into them. And still at this point, as far as we could tell, and the discussion was, they were the only three that were doing this.
Correct.
Like they still never really pointed out or discussed, like, they're talking about taking this national, but they have a 200-mile limit, how this was going to work passing the vote nationally.
So they probably had a plan in place, but without getting approval, it was a pipe dream at this point.
Yeah.
But the thing that I'm going to fast forward before we start getting too inundated on this. When you have something like this, anytime any political initiative that you want to get moved forward, everybody starts checking into everything, the behind the scenes, the in front of the scenes, whichever you want to go. And people start asking all the questions, all the possibilities. We need to look into this. This is how we decide to whether to vote on this or not. So at this point, they're doing everything they can to probably make sure this thing looks as flawless as possible. The last thing you want is anyone to second guess what could be the standalone idea of arresting people before a crime.
Right, that this works.
That this actually works. So the premise of this movie is, what if your lead officer, your chief of the department, is now charged with murder? Or a pre-crime of murder?
Right, yeah. So they have Danny Whitwer, played by, must mention, Colin Farrell.
This was his first major role. He had had some small bit pieces, but this was his first major motion picture. And what does he get? He gets to go head-to-head with Tom Cruise, directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
And
he was really good in it.
Oh, he was fantastic.
So he works for the Justice Department. They're sending him in as kind of like to review this. Like, this is about to go to a major vote. Will this work? Can we make this national? The Justice Department is sending in one of their own to get the ins and outs of the department and review it and make sure this is legit and this is going to work. And while he's there doing his investigation and everything, then Chief John Anderton comes up as a potential for someone who's going to commit murder.
Yeah.
And, well, shit, that doesn't work.
Yeah, like, when you've got your lead officer, all of a sudden, pre-crime is saying, hey, your guy who is here to enforce the law is now apparently going to be above the law.
And he, at this point, and here's the funniest thing, is the way the world works and the way things can happen so quickly. Because they're saying, so we talked about the two different types of murders. There was the premeditated, thought out, this is going to happen, and the crime of passion. The crime of passions, the red balls, they usually come in the day of, and it's about to happen, and they've got, you know, a limited amount of time to figure this out, find where this location is happening based on the visions that they see, and get there to stop it before it happens, right?
Correct.
But the premeditated ones, they usually get several days, if not more, warning, this is going to happen, here's what it looks like, here's what we see. They have more time to investigate and figure it out. He did not come through as a red ball. He came through as a premeditated, had time to think about and plan.
36 hours.
Yeah.
Apparently, according to the precogs.
But at this point, he did not know the murder victim.
No.
So something was going to happen in the next 36 hours where he was going to meet this murder victim, decide in his brain, this person has to die, and plan out how he's going to do it. Not a crime of passion in the moment. I had no thoughts until right this second, dude, you're dead. Like, it was premeditated. But he didn't even know who the person was.
Which is which I found fantastic in the, when it comes up to that. I know I'm jumping ahead, but when we actually get to the point of him about to meet the person who he's potentially going to kill, he's sitting there and he's figured out every possible angle and he's like, there's no way I'm supposed to kill this person. And one single instant happens and immediately he's like, I would think, like, I've been thinking about for these many years what I'd do to the person if I ever met him.
Right.
And it turns out this person is that person.
So that's a very important differentiation, is that it's not that it was premeditated to murder this specific name they were given, because they were given a name. And he's like, I don't know this person. How can I be planning to kill a person I don't know? It wasn't the name.
It was the thought of that
it
person.
It was who the person was. The what he represented. Of the person. That had he ever met this person who he didn't know the name of, didn't know who he was, but if he ever came face to face with him in the future, without a shadow of a doubt, he would kill this person.
Yes.
And it just so happened that it was the same person.
Yeah. I thought that was fantastic writing, the way they did that. Because it's like, because when you think about this whole time, I don't know who this guy is. Why are they chasing me? I don't know who he is.
There's no way I'm going to kill this guy.
I've never heard of this name, but apparently I'm going to kill him in 36 hours. Yeah. And then you get up until about, it's literally 5 minutes before the future catches up.
Yeah.
And it's one of the greatest scenes ever.
And it clicks to him. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to fucking kill this guy. Like,
there's no doubt in his mind, like, this guy's going to die.
Yeah.
And I am in awe of this movie. Spielberg was on a run when he came out with this one. We've seen him do multiple things. I mean, come on, the man helped invent Indiana Jones, E.T., Jaws. He's hit every single genre you can think of. So whenever he goes into something else, it's like, huh, he could do it.
Yeah. I no longer question this man.
The only time I questioned him, I think, was AI. Because that one was kind of iffy. But after, like, pretty much everything, Schindler's List, all these other...
It was an amazing book, though. It's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's not delve down to AI, because that's a whole different
conversation. Yeah, that's a different movie.
My one thing, like, I love this movie. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I love this movie. There's, again, the whole sci-fi fact. It's set in the future. There's all these things that don't exist currently. And the what-ifs, the technology in this movie is amazing. The whole fact that, you know, we don't actually use clairvoyance or precognitive thoughts to help solve crimes. There's that whole aspect. There's certain things in the storyline that piss me off, but it's meant to piss you off and meant to be like, yes, fuck them and the government type of thing. So these precogs, okay, these three people, there's two males that are twins and a female, Agatha, and I don't remember the guy's names. They're twins.
Dashiell and I know what they call, but they say them so infrequently, yeah. I cannot remember the third.
But they work as a triad in conjunction. They each have specific scenes or visions of what's going to happen, and they meld them all together. So these people are not treated like people.
No.
They are kept in a room in this, like, tub of this liquid that they say is like a mixture of nutrients and a formula meant to help bolster their mental capabilities.
Yeah.
They have a caretaker who's like this weirdo geek science guy / recluse who takes care of them and treats them like pets, basically.
I mean, if any of you have seen the movie Matrix, it's pretty close to that. They're there for one purpose, and that's it. Yeah. They're not treated as people. They're treated as things.
They're treated as things. They are people. They were born. They are functioning people, but they are kept in kind of a stasis. They're kept on drugs. They mention amount of drugs they keep them on to keep them in this lucid state.
Yeah.
So that the only thing they do 24/7 is float in this pool and have these visions as they're presented. And again, they're not often, because murder has dropped because of them.
Yeah.
So they have no life. They're kept in this kind of non-life life state. But there's this scene where Chief John Anderton is trying to get back into the building after he's already been accused of possibly committing this crime, and he figures out what he needs to do. One of the things he needs to try and find, it requires him to try and sneak back into the building. And so he's sneaking around the outside of the home office of this place. And there is a tour guide leading school children on a tour around the facility and talking about what pre-crime is and the precogs. And there's this grand statue of the three precogs, like, that they put together.
Very biblical.
Very biblical looking, yes. They mention in it that there are whole people that, like, almost deify them and treat them as gods and pray to them and things like that. Like, it's this whole crazy level stuff. But the tour guide is walking around and telling the children about them. And he's like, oh, they have such great lives. They each have their own apartment. They have all the food and clothes they could need, entertainment, da-da-da. Like, talking up what these great lives they have.
Pure misdirection at the highest level.
And these people have no lives. They're kept in a fucking pool, drugged up.
They're kept in a jar. Let's be honest
On drugs, so that all they can do is have these visions. But on the public perception, it's, oh, they get all the best of everything. We love them. They're so well taken care of. In all intents and purposes, they're fucking lab rats.
Yeah. I mean, you feel such sympathy for...
And anger.
For their lives that they're... lack thereof, right. Lives.
I had never been so angry in a movie by such a throwaway line where you're listening to that and you're just thinking, oh, he's just telling the school children what it's like. And I stopped and I was like, that's not fucking what it's like for them. You're lying to those kids.
Oh, my God. The part, I think that one of the reasons I enjoy this movie, because it does have the that overall feeling of it, at least for me, where you're constantly thinking to yourself, is this the right way to stop crime? Not necessarily having to do with Agatha and the twins. Just the whole idea of you're going on a vision that possibly could be altered, which they talked about one way or another, could be not exactly right, but based on the generalize of these three, the vision that they get, somebody is guilty.
Yeah. And they speak to it too, because it's one of the things that stops him in the eventuality is one of the things that Agatha tells him in the situation in the moment is, you know that you've been accused of this possible crime. You know this is something someone says you're going to do. You can still change it. You can stop it. All these other people that we've arrested in the past, they've not known that this was going to happen, or, you know, at least for the red ball ones, they've not known. The predetermined ones, maybe they did know because they thought it out and planned it out. But right. Like the other ones, it's like they were never given a chance to say, hey, maybe I shouldn't do this.
But in his case, he has had a day to find a way to avoid it at all cost.
Yeah. And the whole thing of you still have a choice. And it's like one of those things I think about where it's like, if we did have these great powers of determining when murders might happen, is catching them before it happens and saying you're being arrested for a crime you might commit and making them go to jail the right way to do it? Or could we do something better, like at least take them into counseling, have a conversation with them, say, hey, it's come to light that this is something that's going to happen. Let's talk through this. Can we stop you from doing this? What help do you need?
Yeah.
To get past this.
I think, and also what helped along the idea of trying to figure out if this is the right way to do it. There's a fantastic scene where Danny Whitwer, Colin Farrell's character, is taking his tour around pre-crime. And, you know, he's made it very apparent that he does not like this because there's always a flaw, especially when you play God. And he was born and raised Catholic, so... Mm-hmm.
He was almost a priest. He went to school, seminary.
3 years of seminary school, and then he changed his mind. He's like, my dad was so happy. And Tom Cruise, or should I say, Anderton, takes one of the balls, rolls it around what is like a half circle type desk, and it goes right out and it's about to fall off, and Colin Farrell catches it. He's like, why did you do that? He's like, because it was going to fall. How'd you know? Maybe it was going to stop. And so it gave you the whole moment of, if you just assume it's going to happen, this is exactly why we're doing what we're doing. Like, if you see something happen and the general, how you perceive things to naturally go in their flow, if something looks like it's going to go that way, shouldn't you intervene?
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, he made a really good point there, you know?
Yeah, and it's not necessarily, here's the thing though, it's not necessarily that they shouldn't intervene, but it's how you intervene.
Definitely. I mean, because their idea of intervening is catching, doing this thing called haloing, where basically, if your mind is set to kill, we're not going to give you another chance to have those thoughts again. So they halo you.
They incapacitate
and
you.
And completely incapacitate you. They put you in prison and basically give you some kind of mind-altering education while you're in prison. But there is no talk of if this is imprisonment or if it's rehabilitation, really.
Right.
You like, never if there's know. A, if there's there a chance that they can will yeah. get a chance to be released.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's like, to your point, it's if there was a moment there where they explained that, hey, we're doing this to better people, I can see the point of doing something like this. But if you're basically like, your one maybe chance that you're going to be a bad guy, you're screwed forever.
Right. Right. There was the whole thing of, too, it's like just the no talking to them and like saying, okay, you were possibly going to do this. Yes, we've stopped you before you did it. So you're not going to do it now because we're not going to let you. But what can we do to help you to not have these thoughts again or not plan murders or not? For the planned ones, yes, I get there was probably some intensive therapy and intensive rehabilitation needed. For the crime of passion ones, like, that's obviously just some talking and therapy and, like, what can we do to help this person? Why did they get to this point that they suddenly snapped and said they're going to kill this person? I don't think they needed prison.
Yeah, I don't think their life needed to be stopped completely. You know, but you intervened.
Yeah. Intervention, yes. Stop the murder, yes.
Yes.
You saw them. Imprison the person?
No. I mean, I can see imprisoning a person who took a week to plan out trying to kill somebody. That's somebody who's taking their time with nothing but intent to harm.
Right.
But a person like in the opening scene of this movie where he's just has a hint that his wife is having an affair. And in the moment, like any other person I can think of, he lost it.
When he catches them, yes. And then there's this point where he snaps and then he's supposed to murder them both. I get it. It's not necessarily the healthy way, but again, you're going to stop it. Great. Yes, please stop it. But then give him help.
Yeah. There's obviously some, like, this is not a person who seems like every day of his life, I'm going to try and kill my wife. This right. is, in the moment, I can't believe she did this to me. I can't think straight, and I'm going to do something that immediately I'm going to regret.
Yeah. Definitely brought up a lot of philosophical thoughts and conversations about the justice system and where the future of the justice system could lead, possibly, if certain fantastical things were to happen.
Right.
I
don't like, if we're talking about also technology stuff, I don't know about you, but I do not want a car that goes up walls.
No. The cars in this was not my favorite way of transportation.
Also, I don't like the fact that no matter where you went, they had things constantly scanning your eyes.
The eyeball scanning.
That you can be tracked every 10 feet or 20 feet.
And the directed personalized ads. Like, we already have that super creepy with Facebook and Alexa and Apple as it is. Like,
yeah.
They read our data on our phones and target ads to us. I don't need to walk into a store, any place with a billboard, and scan my eyes, and suddenly it's like, hey, Jana, oh, welcome back. How'd that tank top you bought last week work out for you? Or, oh, Jana, don't you want to go away to such and such? Like, I don't like, need my ads talking to me.
Yeah, I don't need to be walking and, like, going past a Lexus dealership. Hey, isn't about time, Kevin, you got a new car? I'm like, get out of my face!
It's very invasive.
Yeah.
I hope we never get to the eye level scanning of identification.
Like, I can understand it for, like, retinal scan for security purposes, but yeah. Everyday normalcy,
everything scanning your eyes?
Walking and, like, just walking down the street and, like, here's an ad. I'm like, no.
You're bombarded.
You're low-jacked.
Yeah. No, I didn't care for that either. I do not want that future at all. If anything, this movie helped open my eyes to the kind of future and technology I do not want.
I will agree with that 100%.
But still, it's a fantastic movie.
I can watch it over and over. It's so good. The ending is fantastic. And the whole cast, everybody has a great part and they play it perfectly.
And again, to say, I never thought in a million years I would love a sci-fi movie with Tom Cruise in it. Like, but afterwards, I was like, damn, is he going to do more sci-fi? Like, this was really good. Like, he surprised me in this.
Yeah, he's done a couple of dramatic roles since then. He's kept his Mission Impossible franchise going, but he hasn't really gone back to sci-fi that much. So, I mean...
But he could.
He could.
And I'm not knocking Tom Cruise. I love Tom Cruise for the things he does. Mission Impossible is great. There's some things he does
in Mission Impossible. I'm like, okay, this man needs to be checked. Because there's no reason for him to be taking some of the risks he does for his movies.
And I'm sorry. Like, Legend? One of his first ever movies? That's one of my, like, childhood memories. And then... you have things like Interview with a Vampire.
Oh, God, Lestat. We have to say it before we switch subjects. Top Gun Forever and a Day.
Yeah, Top Gun. There's things he does amazingly. I should have known he could have taken this and run with it. It was just not something I was used to seeing him in. And I've seen a lot of sci-fi movies in my day. And I just, my brain at first did not click. And then I saw it and I said, I should have known better.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those, yeah, no, I'm not doubting this, man.
Yeah, he can do no wrong, acting-wise. Let me clarify that. Acting-wise.
Personal life aside, we're talking about the man's professional acumen right now.
At his job, he can do no wrong. Everything else, I'm not getting into that because.
Well, I think I can pretty much figure out where you're going to go with this, but if you had to give it on a scale of 1 to 5.
Oh, 5 clamshells. Absolutely.
We are in agreement. This is one of my favorite Steven Spielberg movies, one of my favorite Tom Cruise movies. For me, like, I always remember that Colin Farrell got put on the map thanks to this.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, our thoughts on the movie Minority Report. It is available everywhere. Flip over your couch, you'll probably see somebody running on it. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Find it. It's out there.
Please. The truth is out there. Wait a minute, that's X-Files. That's never mind. Else.
Yeah. And find us. We are out there. We are all over social media. We are on Facebook. We are on Instagram. We are on Twitter. We are on TikTok and YouTube. On Facebook and Instagram, we are at Video Store Memoirs. On Twitter, we are at Video Store Mem. And on TikTok and YouTube, we are Video Store Memoirs. Give us a like, follow, tweet, love, comment, whatever.
I'll take some love. I love the love. Thank you to all of you who continue to check us out. I appreciate every single one of you. I see your messages. I respond to as many as possible. Keep them coming. We adore it. Next week, we're going to get biblical with you people. One of our all-time favorites. Well, at least I'm speaking for myself here. I mean, what do you think? Is it one of your all-time favorite?
It's up there. From a non-religious person, it's up there. Yes.
So next, we're going to have a movie that has an intermission. We will be taking a look at the Ten Commandments.
Because it's Easter! Sorry. Yeah. It's the holiday season. A different holiday season. But we're going to get into the mood of Jesus and shit.
Jesus and shit.
I know. I'm so...
Yeah, you know, it's been a year since you've called it Zombie Jesus.
But actually, this movie's nothing about Jesus. It's way before Jesus. It's the Ten Commandments. It's about God and shit. I should say that.
No, like, yeah, this is about guns and Moses, if you were going to go anyway. The great Charlton Heston, may he rest in peace.
We're going to talk about Moses and the Ten Commandments and let my people go.
There it is. All right. And with that, I've been Kevin.
I'm Jana.
We'll see you next time. Enjoy the movie, people.
Bye.